I'm Bob Franklin. This is Like It Is. That was a musical excerpt from the tune Humanity, performed by Daphna Edwards Zeiman, today's Like It Is guest. Daphna is an award-winning composer, filmmaker, novelist, media executive, and humanitarian. I begin my interview with Daphna asking her, as an advocate for the rights and well-being of children globally, USAID funding was eliminated by the government, and the results have been devastating on children and families worldwide. Coupled with war, how does these situations impact you, Daphna, as an advocate, entertainer, and as a human being?
Well, you know, it's many, many different elements, you know, when all of a sudden you find yourself in a situation where you have knowledge of things that are impacting our children all over the world, and you know, and all of a sudden you recognize that as a citizen of the United States, you're limited in terms of the kind of help you can offer. And so that alone makes you feel that, how am I going to overcome this? And, you know, for a long time, I don't know just how much you know, but, you know, I've been working with at-risk children and against sex trafficking for a long time. And, you know, the situation has gotten much, much worse. And some time ago, Prince Muamba from Congo, from, you know, the Democratic Republic of Congo, invited me to Kinshasa. And I saw over there girls, 6 years old, 7 year old, being sold for a dollar so they can take a cup of rice to eat for themselves and their families. That broke my heart because, unfortunately, a lot of villages and the lack of water and the lack of power created such hunger and such, you know, poverty that, you know, parents were selling their children in order to eat and survive. And so when I got involved, we partnered up with Innovation Africa, which was funded by Israel. And for every village that we were able to raise money for a water tower and, you know, all the, you know, the power, the solar power and the training of the families and the girls to become farmers and, you know, to be able to build their own bricks and stuff like that. Is, you know, so for every amount of money, which is under $100,000, Israel would put up two villages. So now with Innovation Africa, there are 1,000 villages that have become micro agricultural economies. And it was, we worked with the Biden administration to get USAID to recognize the value of that. And the fact that, you know, with hunger across the world, it enabled Africa, which is probably the best earth in the world, you know, in terms of agriculture. We felt that we could actually build thousands more villages like that, save girls from being sex workers, save families from starvation, and create micro-agricultural economies, and be able to grow food that ultimately can quench hunger, not just in Africa, but everywhere else in the world. So the program was moving nicely. And just when the administration had instructed USAID to amplify the effort is when they were shut down. And so obviously it's with great sadness that I watch the impact of that. And I see children, being sent into trafficking because of the problems and because of the starvation and the poverty and the hunger. We all have to think about it in a different way because, this is the next generation. And if we don't do everything that we can for the next generation, then we've not only betrayed our children and and the next generation and the generation after that, but we've betrayed ourselves because we basically are, passing the earth on to the next generation a lot worse than we received it. And that's not okay.
I visited Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, and there I visited widespread poverty, hunger, and sexually exploited young women living on street corners in Addis Ababa. This situation has impacted me to this day, and I'm wondering, Daphna, if there are poignant moments or images that you have witnessed, and how has it impacted you?
It has impacted me. In fact, the song Humanity is all about what I have seen and our obligation as members of the global family, and I'm a member. It's our obligation to stop, thinking that we could just because we can't trust media and we can't trust governments, that we have to forfeit our humanity. And, when I was in Africa, but also here in on Figueroa Street, right here in Los Angeles, I just had a meeting with the district attorney, with the city attorney was there, the police, the sheriff, and finally everybody's recognizing that we need to build a village right here to save these girls. We need to create safe homes. We need to take care of our children. And all the girls that are being sold into being sex workers now are underage. It is the most cruel thing ever to think that sex trafficking is now a $500 billion business on the back of these young girls and boys as well, but mostly girls. And their demand is all men.
How
And
could
that is a part of what I believe so deeply is that's the cancer of the world today.
our children be invisible? How can our most precious resource, the next generation, be viewed as invisible?
Yeah, because and it's many, many steps, and it's the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing. There are many elements that need to be looked at very seriously. Number one, social media, the dark side of social media. Number two, the way social media has put a sort of an image of what a girl is supposed to look like, and with the big rear side and the small waist and all of that. And it's basically caused such exploitation because everything is about what do I do to my body? What do I do to my face so a man likes me? And that is basically selling who you are or who you think you should be in order to gain something. The mentality should be, what can I do to increase my knowledge? What can I do to feel good about myself? What do I do to really love myself, to grow? That should be the elements. And that's why, I feel that we need to do everything in our power to change the communication media and the industry, because we need to look at, at our responsibility from a different point of view. We can't just milk it and gain position or money or power or whatever it is, we have to start thinking, what are we leaving behind? How is what we do important for the next generation, for the next person, for that little girl that sees a movie or hears a song that all of a sudden makes her feel like she's valuable?
So the responsibility is on the media, the performers, and the individuals presenting these images to our young people. Is that their responsibility? Yes.
It's on all of us. And that's why I wrote the song Humanity. And the next song, In Your Eyes, actually, I use Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream, as a sample in it, because he talks about how every baby born is the same. It's the character that we build. And then In Your Eyes describes in the spoken word about how we see the inspiration of the world in a baby's eyes. We see hope in a baby's eyes because that's creation and that's the hope of the world. And it's up to us to recognize our responsibility towards those eyes.
In your opinion, why is now a powerful cultural moment in music and activism? Seems as though both are coming together.
I think because there's such hunger for it. We're living in a world now where everybody's suffering from a trust deficiency disorder. We don't trust our governments, we don't trust media, and we've forgotten how to trust each other. And so people are coming out with a sort of a deep cry for a culture that makes us feel like we're worthy as human beings.
I'm quoting from your press release, quote, "Music always instigates the change that could bring us together," end quote. If music can bring us together, what is pulling us apart other than communities' indifference toward one another?
Well, what's pulling us apart, we are bombarded by opinions. We are bombarded by people who are mining in the pockets of our listeners, of our viewers. And everything is all about, how do we engage in such a way that we can mine the pocket of our audience? And because we're doing it that way, we're losing sight of what the craving hearts are yearning for. What the craving hearts of our children are yearning for. When I speak publicly, and I speak a lot publicly, people ask me, what can I do to contribute to make children feel better, feel worthy, feel like a sense of belonging? And I say, we all have to do one thing. We have to go home. We have to have dinner with our children. We have to help them with their homework. We have to hug them. We have to be there. We can't continue to be invisible parents and expect our children to, be okay because we're working. It's not okay. Our first responsibility is within our own family, and then the responsibility is within our own community. And then our responsibility is within our own city. And then the responsibility is within our own country. We all have to look at each other and say, I am a part of your family, and I want what's best for you, not just me.
So it takes the entire community, and that community would include parents, community, and government.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I was born in Israel, and every day after school, my mom used to prepare after school snacks. And because mom and my dad really believed in community. And the kids in school used to love coming home with me. Basically, just to eat my mom's cookies and stuff and snacks. But what it created is a sort of an environment where kids came together and they were eating and talking and, and feeling a sense of unity in a community that was offering them, a place where they felt, even if they are in somebody else's home, they felt like they belong. It's very rare nowadays to see that. It's very rare that, that people open up their home like that. And most of the kids come home now and there's maybe a housekeeper there, and no one to help them with their homework. And no one to be there because both mom and dad are working. And we have to figure out how to solve this problem.
Who are some of your cultural, artistic, cinematic, and musical influencers?
I have to tell you, I was good friends with Michael Jackson. I was good friends with Etta James before she passed away. Etta was in prison. Etta was, so aware of what lacked on the streets that she could fill in with passion of her voice and her intensity. If you listen to the song A Blind Girl, for instance, she tapped into the deep emotion of a loss of love. There's so many of her songs that dealt with the outsiders in her, in a, within us, in a, amongst us. And I believe that her songs and her music touched many people because they were so real. And then Michael Jackson, he got us all to sort of like feel like a unity in the music and in the beat and in the craft of music that made us feel like we belonged in a sound within a sound that he created. But we felt a genuine sense of belonging, And I can give you so many examples. I mean, Sting wrote the song, The Russians Love Their Children Too. It's a song everybody knew, and it made us think, my God, yeah, they have parents, they have children, they're just like us. And so music has always somehow penetrated culture and showed the world, and it's always ahead of films, ahead of everything. Music is the pioneer of culture.
One historical example of music being a pioneer of culture is Marvin Gaye's song, Mercy, Mercy Me.
I was just gonna say that that's what big example. Big example. I just quoted Sting. I mean, there's so many, it's hard for me to now all of a sudden think through it, but Elton John, for instance, it's just there's so many songs that really, that really express a yearning. I mean, I want to know what love is. Do you know that the number one question on Google is how do I love myself?
I didn't
So,
know that.
yeah. So you have everybody's yearning. They're listening to music to take them into that other place, the place where they can feel a part of something. And I don't know. I mean, I was told that, so many people were reached with humanity, the song, and so many people made videos of the song. Their own videos, and the common denominator of the videos that I saw was really incredible moments of within our own time in our humanity that really pierce your heart because, of what's going on in the world and how hurtful it is.
Let's talk a bit more about your song, Humanity. There's a wonderful quote from Chaka Khan about the song. Tell us about that.
But Shaka, it's so amazing to me that Shaka amazes me, and I'll tell you a little story. Shaka has the performer shaka, the humanitarian shaka, the creator shaka, and that voice. And I once said to her, I said, if God had a voice, it would be Shaka Khan, because her voice is, no one has a voice like that. But so for me, it was an incredible compliment and an endorsement when she said that my song was so important and powerful. But she and I, philanthropically, have worked together in the past. And I'll tell you a story, because, in my past, I was the creator of Children Uniting Nations with Hillary Clinton's help. And it became huge because we did the Day of the Child, we created Adoption Day in all children's court for foster kids, etc. And so, in the process of doing all that, Shaka contributed, as did Stevie Wonder, as did Dionne Warwick, as did Black Eyed Peas. All of them performed when we would take over, an arena, and brought 1,000 foster kids and 1,000 mentors, so that we could join mentors and foster kids together, as to enable foster kids to connect with community. But in any event, one day Shaka said, "You know what I want to do, Daphna? Her nephew suffers from autism. And so she's, I want to open up a classroom in South Central Los Angeles. And I want the classroom to be just for autistic children so that they can help get the help they really need beyond what they're normally getting." And I thought that was a brilliant idea. So she did that, and I went in my car to the school. She came in a limousine. But anyway, and so there was barbed wire and the gate and all of that. So they let me in, and I was parked inside. We went into the classroom, and she sang with the children and everything. It was such beauty. They had no idea who she was. All they knew is that somebody was singing for them, and somebody was there because they cared. And we drew pictures with them and everything. There was no audience, there was no recognition. None of these kids knew who she was, nor did anyone even thought about it. It was all about what she could give. When we left, she left in her limo, and I went back in my car. And as I was passing the 7-Eleven, I saw some guys in color, and I got scared. My heart was pumping really strongly. And, I thought, okay, either I drive really fast, then they're gonna chase me, or I'm gonna just try and be normal, or I'm going to stop and turn around. But I didn't get a chance to do any of this because one of the guys sort of looked at me really directly and then jumped in front of my car. So I stopped, and he came to my window, and he motioned for me to open up the window. I can't tell you how scared I was. And then I opened up the window, and he said, "Miss Daphne, what are you doing here? Why are you here? This is not safe for you." And it was one of the kids that was a foster kid that was in the Day of the Child. And he had his other two guys jump in the car with me and take me to the freeway so that I would be safe. I mean, the reason I'm telling you the story is because we blankly brand people, but this was a human being that was concerned about my safety.
Let me share a similar type story. Some years back, I had a conversation with Senator Jay Rockefeller of West Virginia. He told me about a time in Washington, D.C., when he was coming from a theatrical play at Howard University. Senator Rockefeller noticed walking behind him were two young black men. Mr. Rockefeller told me that he became very frightened, thinking he was about to be mugged. Much to his surprise, the two young black men only wanted to ask his thoughts on the play he had just watched. The senator admitted that he had racially profiled these young black men, judging them solely by the color of their skin.
Exactly, which is why this album was so important to me to make, because I want people to recognize that, you know, that they belong, that they are part of our human family. And that's really important. I mean, I can't wait for you to listen to the song In Your Eyes, because you will really get a lot of feelings from that one too. And I'm really grateful that Paul Oakenfold and Molly Mall insisted that I make this record, you know, because both of them are such huge, you know, and very qualified producers, Grammy nominees and Grammy winners, you know. And for them to honor me like that is because they too really recognize the need for something meaningful out there in the music world.
My guest has been Daphna Edwards Zeiman. Thank you for being a guest today on Like It Is.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and I really, really enjoy talking to you, Robert. And I appreciate your experiences out there, because it only enhances our need to collectively, you know, change the mode, change, you know, what people think is expected, and really try to get to bring everybody under the same umbrella.
My guest has been Daphna Edwards Zeiman. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
With a sword of compassion, humanity marches on, facing violence and inhumanity. All eyes are on those heroes that are holding on. With our freedom hanging by a thread, and our trust in each other torn to shreds. Who can we look up to but our humanity?
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.